This is the Pure Green Podcast, episode 35. Welcome back, everybody. I'm sorry for the extended break. It's been an overwhelmingly busy time over here. I have big news to share with you in the coming weeks, which will shed light on where I've been all this time. However, today, I'm getting back into the swing of things with a fantastic episode, which I'm really excited about for a bunch of reasons. First, this guest has been requested several times by our listeners. And second, this is an episode that I feel could make a big impact and thus a big difference. Our guest today has been called the Waste-Free Priestess by the New York Times. She's won green awards, has authored a book, and promotes and speaks about her lifestyle around the world. She is responsible for a global movement that has been called the Way of the Future, inspiring change nearly everywhere she goes. Her name is Bea Johnson, and she writes Zero Waste Home, a blog and now a best-selling book of the same name. Before we dive into the episode, though, consider this. Annually, the world produces about 2.6 trillion pounds of garbage. Break that down a bit, and the average person in developed countries produces 2.6 pounds of waste daily. Bea and her family of four produces only a quart-sized mason jar of trash per year. Yep, you heard that right, per year. And in this episode, she will explain how she does it, and what we don't cover, you can read in her book. Here's Bea.
So just to give listeners some context, I wondered if you could briefly define zero waste living.
Well, waste-free living is about trying to reduce as much as possible your solid waste. For us, the zero waste lifestyle has translated into a life based on experiences instead of things. It's translated into a life based on being instead of having.
Okay. I love that. I think that it leads to a life that is so much richer, but it takes a little while to make that mind shift probably to get to that place, I would imagine. So I'm curious, what was your life like prior to adopting the zero waste lifestyle, and why did you feel the need to make that change?
Well, so I'm originally from France, and I met my husband, who's American. We lived in Europe for a while, but I really wanted to come back to the U.S. to live the American dream. And so we lived in a large home with we had SUVs and large refrigerators. And I say large refrigerators because in Europe, the refrigerators are tiny. And big washing machines, and because in Europe, they're small. but after 7 years, we found that we were missing. We missed living in a busy kind of in a downtown that would be lively, and we had to take the car to go everywhere. We had to get in the car to go to schools, to go to the movie theater, the grocery store, to do just about anything. We had to get into a car, and we really missed that lifestyle that we had known in the capitals that we had lived in Europe. So in an effort to get closer to a downtown with a walking area and within walking distance of our house, we decided to relocate to rediscover that lifestyle. So we rented an apartment for a year, and we only moved in with the necessities. And we found that by living with less, all of a sudden we had more time in our hands to do the things that we enjoy doing. All of a sudden we had more time to spend as a family, with friends. And then when we did find the ideal home in that downtown that interested us, we got everything out of storage. And we realized that we hadn't missed 80% of our belongings. So we let go of about 80% of our belongings at that time. It took us obviously a year to really narrow it down to the tiny little details. But and then thanks to that voluntary simplicity, we were able to educate ourselves on environmental issues. All of a sudden we had time to read books and watch documentaries on the question of on the environment. And what we found really made us sad, thinking about the future that we were going to leave behind for our kids. And all of a sudden, my husband and I decided that we wanted to change our consuming habits, and create a better world for our kids, and just wanting a better future for them.
Yeah, it's amazing how having less led to just having so much more time. Was it just mostly because stuff creates work? You know, you didn't have
definitely.
To.
Definitely. I mean, once you simplify your life, you realize how much time you were wasting before, cleaning, maintaining, putting things away. But it's also thanks to the zero waste lifestyle, there are a lot of products that we simply no longer buy, or products that we've replaced with multifunctional replacements. So, for example, today to wash my hair, my face, my body, and also to shave, we buy one bar of soap that we purchase and package. It's sold loose. And so that's one product that has eliminated four other ones. I no longer have to worry about the toxic ingredients that those products contain. I no longer have to go to the store to buy those things. I no longer have to throw them in my car, take them up to my house, I don't have to recycle their containers and go to the store to buy more. So it's just one example amongst hundreds of others that show how this lifestyle can really simplify your life and make time in your life for what matters more.
Yeah, it's funny because I don't think people think about, at least I hadn't even thought about all the time that it took to think about, oh, I'm out of this particular product, must go and get more, and all of that involves. It really is liberating, as you've discovered. So you have a family of four, and at the time, it sounded like it took you about a year, and it doesn't even sound like it was something that you struck out to do. It was just a side effect of the circumstances. So your kids at that age, how old were they?
So my kids were, 6 and 7 when we started. And today they are 14 and 15. So they've actually lived longer without waste than they have with waste. And when we started, because zero waste is really more about what you do outside the house than what you do inside your home. So it's when you buy in bulk and when you buy secondhand that you'll stop waste from coming into your home. And since I am the person making those decisions, I'm the one that's buying those things for the house, basically our zero waste lifestyle had gone totally unnoticed to the kids. We once took a field trip to the local health food store with my son's class, and the teacher in front of the bulk bins asked why it was a good thing to buy in bulk, and my son just stood there and did not participate in the question. And I thought, wow, I mean, it's crazy. Out of all the kids here, my son should be the first one to answer this. And it dawned on me on the way home that, you know, because I make the purchasing decisions, because I had eliminated packaging from our lives, it had gone totally unnoticed to my children. Once we got home, I opened the pantry and I asked my son, do you notice anything different in our pantry compared with your friends? And he said, no, what? And I said, well, we don't have packaging. He's like, so? So kids have very simple needs, and as long as those needs are met, as long as they have a cereal that they like in the morning and a snack that they like when they come home from school, they're happy. It's up to us, the people that shop for the household, to make better purchasing decisions.
Mm-hmm. So I can appreciate how they've just come alongside, but I'm curious about their own personal possessions. Like, at that age, they would have had lots of toys, and I think even eco-minded parents feel tempted to buy their kids more than they need. So how did you negotiate that territory with them?
So when in front of their selection of toys, we asked them to pick their favorites, and not that I am being paid to mention those brands, but they luckily picked Playmobil and Legos. And although these things are made out of plastic, you know, which obviously is not the most environmental material, at least they picked toys that were long-lasting. I mean, those are brands that just don't break. And so then when my kids grew out of it, they were able to sell those things and to buy themselves more age-appropriate replacements. But when they let go of all the all the clutter, the little toys, the party favors that don't belong to any category or don't belong to a specific bin, for example, then everything became easier for them. It became easier to clean their room. All of a sudden, we stopped fighting about how to, you know, for them to clean their room because it simply made it easier. And they only had a few bins, so then they knew exactly where their toys were supposed to go. And then all of a sudden, they had more time to play. So once they really made that connection that less equals playing with your favorite toys and having more time to play with them, they were sold.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's a really good strategy. And how has that changed now that they're a little bit older? Do they make their own decisions now and it's just not an issue?
Well, I mean, they ever since they were little, we told them that their job was to refuse what they do not need. And so, for example, yesterday my son was at the orthodontist, and the orthodontist, to thank him for coming, she said, "Oh, why don't you pick one of our pencils? Just pick a favor, you know, a party favor." And my son said, "No, thank you. I don't need any." She said, "No, come on. I mean, you can use a pencil, right? I mean, just take one." And he said, "No, thanks." She said, "Come on, just go pick a pencil." She was really putting pressure on him. And he said, "No, thank you. I really have enough pencils at home." And then she dropped it. But you know, it's they've learned to not bring in things that they don't need. They've learned that party favors are made, for example, to only last a few seconds, and then they break. And then they cry, and then they wish they had never gotten it in the first place. So, so that's what they learned ever since they were little. And when I pointed out to them that party favors end up making them cry, they really made that connection and realized, okay, maybe I should say no to those things.
Yeah. I wasn't planning to ask this question, but I guess I've noticed that sometimes people do pressure you to accept gifts. And so I can see how that might put you in a situation sometimes that's a bit uncomfortable. And not just with gifts, but just with other things, like refusing. Do you find that comes up a lot for you and for your kids, or no? It's just
not anymore. I think, you know, part of living a zero-waste lifestyle is that you need to learn to say no. Because every time, I mean, in this consumer society, we're the targets of many promotional goods on a regular basis. I mean, we can get out of the house before, you know, you get out of the house and you're handed out a pamphlet or junk mail or a freebie. You know, you go to a conference, you're given a swag bag with lots of promotional goods, free pen, plastic bags, etc. But every time we take those things and that we do not need, every time we take a free plastic bag or a free plastic pen, we are saying, "I love plastic bags, I love plastic pens, and I want a future filled with those things for my children." And more of those things will be created. Every time we take a plastic pen that we don't need, more oil is drilled from the ground to create a replacement. So it's very important to learn to say no to those things. So we've actually learned to, you know, we have simple sentences to just go straight to the point. When I'm at the store and they try to give me a sample, I say, "No, thank you. I don't, you know, I don't buy packaging." Or "No, thank you." If someone tries to give me stuff, I say, "No, thank you. I live a minimalist lifestyle." Or "No, thank you. You know, I live simply and I've decluttered my home. I don't want more stuff. No, thank you. I don't need it." And generally, "No, thank you. I don't need it" is what people really respect. I mean, if you say that, they're like, "Oh, okay." And they won't push you.
Yeah.
No, unless it's your orthodontist.
I guess, you know, a side benefit too is that when you have view of something, you take much better care of it. So you always know where you your one pen or your, I mean, I know you've written about ponytail holders.
Yeah, and in the case of my pen, for example, I use a refillable fountain pen. It's a, you know, I only have one pen. It's a vintage fountain pen. It's a Mont Blanc that I purchased on eBay, and I take really good care of it, and I always know where it is. Sadly, it broke recently. I was at Google signing books, and I was about to sign books, and as I went to reach for in my bag to get my pen, I saw that he had, I mean, I don't know if I stepped on it by mistake because he was in my purse, but the pen broke. So then the advantage of having something that then is quality instead of quantity is that, you can turn back and ask the manufacturer to repair it. So right now, my my pen is getting repaired at Mont Blanc.
There you go.
So I'm using my husband's, in case you're wondering.
So Bea, you have some main principles that help you manage your waste. Can you walk us through what those are?
Yes, so in order for us to generate just a liter jar of waste per year, we found that it's as simple as following five rules in order. And that really, these rules are to be applied in order. It's extremely important to understand that. So it's about refusing what you do not need, reducing what you do need, which is, you know, adopting a lifestyle of voluntary simplicity. Reusing what you cannot, basically reusing by swapping anything that's disposable for a reusable alternative and buying secondhand, and then recycling only what you cannot refuse, reduce, or reuse, and finally rotting, that is composting the rest. And truly, if you follow these rules in order, you'll be able to greatly, greatly reduce your waste.
I think you're doing order because by following those in order, you're actually bringing in less, therefore there's less to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first rule is to refuse. So if you simply say no, then you will have less to reduce. Once you've reduced, then you'll have even less to reuse, and etc. But really, the first rule to living a zero-waste lifestyle is to simply learn to say no. And once you learn to do that, you'll be amazed how much stuff and clutter you'll be able to stop from coming into your home. And then life becomes easier. You have less to clean, less to pick up, and less to throw away.
Yeah, well, I think you said that your cleaning routine, you do it once a week and it only takes 1 hour.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about just doing the floor and the dusting. I'm talking about cleaning the bathroom and cleaning my refrigerator and wiping, you know, the front of my cabinets and all that. It's just that when you don't have a lot, then, I mean, the less you have, the less you have to maintain and clean and repair.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's just evidence in and of itself. I think most people have to set aside a whole day. Others have to pay other people to do it.
Well, now, I have to say my secret also is that I use house music, electronic music when I clean, and because it greatly energizes me. What can I say? I'm a Euro. I'm a Euro chick.
Yeah. Well, I do that too. It's definitely feel uplifted faster.
Then what's the point of going to the gym, I mean, paying a gym subscription when you can actually clean your house and get your exercise at the same time?
It's true. Yes, I mean, the images that you have on your website of your home are just, I mean, they're awe-inspiring because they're so minimalist. So do they look like that all the time, or is that right after?
Again, because what you don't have is not going to clutter your space. So people say, oh, your house looks so clean. Is it clean like this all the time? Well, my house looks clean because it's white. I have white floors, white furniture. But if you look closely, you'll see dust bunnies in the corners. Because I only clean my house once a week. So obviously, dust bunnies start collecting throughout the week. But it's picked up because there is nothing to really clutter the space or the floor.
Right. What about like books, or like what do you do for leisure?
So we have actually donated all our books. It was part of our decluttering process. The great thing about decluttering is that when you let go of the things you don't truly use on a regular basis or truly use or truly need, then you're putting them back on the market. You're boosting the secondhand market. You're making these things, which are valuable resources in themselves, you're making them available to other people. You're allowing people to find these things secondhand, and so in the end they won't be forced to buy new if they have chosen to only buy secondhand, like we do. So in the case of books, we really realized that what we like with books is to we like to read new books all the time. So we thought, I mean, new from the library. So what we've done is basically we donate all our books to, we've donated all our books to the library. So it's, we've made them available to the whole community that way. And then when we want to read a book, then we simply order one from the library. And the library is really awesome because you can just place an order, and then when it comes in, they let you know and you just have to pick it up. And my kids even use their high school library, so they don't even use the city library anymore.
So let's deconstruct a couple areas of the house just to give readers an idea of what they should be paying attention to. So I think that probably most of the waste in the home is generated in the kitchen. So what are the basics of a zero waste kitchen?
So in the kitchen, you have different waste aspects. There's the packaging waste, and then there is the food waste. To eliminate packaging waste, you simply need to shop the bulk aisle of your local health food store. I've created an app called Bulk to help people locate their nearest bulk locations. In my case, I know where my bulk locations are. I don't really use the app for when I'm in town. However, it comes really handy when I travel. I simply have to enter my location, and then it shows me, points to the bulk locations that are available near me. Then as far as food waste, there is a lot of things that you can do, and I present quite a few in the book on how to eliminate food waste, and I can really say with a lot of pride that there is no food that goes to waste in our house, simply because we have adopted a rotation system, so that, for example, instead of having lots of different types of grains in our cupboard, we'll just have one type. When we've emptied that jar, then we'll buy a different one. And we don't buy, when we go grocery shopping, we obviously make an inventory of what we already have in the fridge, so we know exactly what we have and we know exactly what we need. But also, coming from the fact that we purchase our food in reusable containers, using basically glass jars or cloth bags, for example, when we purchase them in the bulk, we buy them in cloth bags, but then we transfer them in glass jars. So since all our food is basically stored in glass jars, we know exactly what we have. And we have a refrigerator drawer system. We don't have a normal or a regular kind of armoire-style refrigerator. We have drawers, which means that nothing can get lost in the back of a shelf. And because we store everything in glass containers, we can see through them and we know exactly what we have on hand. When I see that something has been in the fridge for more than a few days, then I'll make a great effort to reinvent it, reuse it in different ways.
Where I live, which is in rural Canada, don't have a ton of choice in terms of where we shop. There's two things that I find very difficult to surmount. So organic food, for some reason, just comes with extra packaging. It seems everything's wrapped in plastic, and I don't know why. So non-organic food isn't wrapped. So it's just been a toss-up for me. What's better? I sort of feel like not eating organic kind of negates the environmental benefit of the packaging and also the health aspect, but it just gets complicated in my brain. And the other thing is that our bulk store and the grocery stores don't allow us to bring our own packaging. They say it's because of rules imposed by our healthcare system with cross-contamination or whatever. I think it's ridiculous. But they don't allow it. So we have plastic bags in which to purpose. So what are some things that you have products like?
Okay, so in the case of for the conundrum between organic foods versus bulk foods, I understand that there is many parts of the world where this is the case, where it's kind of a oxymoron that the organic food is packaged and the one that's non-organic is not packaged. There is a petition out there which I have shared on my social media to actually change that, so that the one that has been sprayed would be packaged, and the organic food would then be available without packaging. It's obviously up to everyone to adopt the zero waste lifestyle, within their own regional differences and their regional limitations, but also to make the choices that they think is right for them. As far as the rules, You know, it's really interesting because there are thousands and thousands of my followers in Canada that are buying their food in reusable containers. In the U.S., you know, we get the same kind of the same answer from the stores. When I started, actually, just to give you a good little anecdote, there is this grocery store, health food store, where I had been shopping for 2 years using my own containers. And then one day I showed up and a new staff was behind the counter. And when I asked to have my meat put in the jar, she said, "Oh, I'm sorry, we can't do this. This is against health and safety regulations." And I said, "What are you talking about? You guys have been filling my jar for the past 2 years. Just put it in." And she said, "No, I'm sorry, it's against health and safety regulations." And I looked at her, I'm like, "Can you please go ask your manager?" So she goes ask her manager, she comes back and she says, "Okay, I can do it." So she puts it in my jar. I leave. I come back a month later, same person behind the counter. I said, "Hi, can you please give me a pound of ham in my jar?" And she said, "No, I'm sorry. It's against health and safety regulations." I'm like, "Are you kidding me? You talked to me. You said the same thing 1 month. Then you asked your manager and then you filled my jar." She said, "Well, I'm sorry, but it's against health and safety regulations." And I looked at her and I said, "Please go ask your manager." She went, asked her manager, came back. She said, "Okay, I can fill the jar." So think about the person that would go to the store for the first time. Yeah. Someone that tried it out for the first time. She would have gone to that grocery store. The person would have told her, "I'm sorry, it's against health and safety regulations." The person would have said to me, "I'm sorry, I can do it in my region." And people tell me that all over the world. "I'm sorry, I can't." And yet I know that in their own region, there are other people doing zero waste and getting their jobs filled. So it's a question of getting through your store and talking to the manager. And if they really say that it's against the rules, ask for the rules, ask to see the rules, because you'll see, and I'm not really familiar with the one in Canada, but I know that I have a lot of zero waste followers getting their containers filled there. But in the U.S., the FDA rules say that a store cannot refill their own takeout packaging. Let's say if you buy a salad in a takeout container, you eat your salad, you finish your salad, and then you go back for more, they're not allowed to refill your container, which is normal, right? Because then that would have been contaminated if you were sick or whatever. But the rules don't say anything about filling a clean container coming from someone's home, period.
Yeah. That is interesting. I asked and they said no, and I was like, "Oh, okay."
And,
well,
there is a whole technique also to doing it. It's one, not looking at them in the eyes if you're going to do it for the first time, because if you do look at them in the eyes, they'll feel your doubt and they'll simply say no, because it's easier for them to say no to you than figure out how to tear your jar, because often they're even embarrassed to recognize that they don't know how to use the tear system on their scale. So it's just much easier for them to do the things just the way they've always done it and get rid of you. But they are also, so I've been in situations where, you know, if I'm traveling and I'm going in a new store, I just don't look at them in the eyes. I just look at the selection, for example, of meat or cheese. And I, as I hold the jar up to them, I say, "Please fill my jar with this cheese right there." And I don't look at them. There's been cases where, especially like last year in Oregon, this person just stared at me. I could feel that she just was not moving. I felt that she was still staring at me. And I looked up and I said, "Yes, is there a problem?" She said, "Well, I've never done this." And I'm like, "Oh, well, that's okay. Take your time." And she's like, "Okay." And she did it. And there's been other instances where people told me, "Oh, I just can't do that. It's against health and safety regulations." And I told them, I'm like, "Well, that's well, because Whole Foods does it." They're like, "Oh, Whole Foods does it? Okay, then they do it." So, you know, there is different tips and tricks that, you know, will work with different, I mean, depending on the staff you have in front of you.
Yeah. I wouldn't have thought that, not to people, but obviously you found us work. So thanks for the tip. So
asked, you know, why do you do this? I mean, the simplest answer is to say, "I just don't have a trash can." I mean, no need to go in like big debates and try to educate them about zero waste and all that. That's, you know, that's not why you're there. You're simply there to eliminate the packaging. And just saying you don't have a trash can is just straight to the point. They understand that right away, and they're more willing to help you.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, super interesting. I'm gonna try again. So in a situation where it's more like a bulk food store, there's just a whole bunch of bins, and you don't necessarily weigh each thing. They do that for you at the cash. How do you manage that? Like, you just use the cloth bags, which weigh very little, and then don't worry about tearing it?
Yeah, it really depends. So like at my health food store, they know how to do that. So I have written, and it's important to have the amount, the tear weight written on the front of the bag right next to where you'd write the item number, because otherwise if they don't see a tear number, sometimes they won't even bother. And depending on where I go, let's say if I'm traveling and it's a new store, then I won't even bother. You know, it's like 0.5 ounces or something. So I just, you know, it's really not important to me. It's more important that I do zero waste and to support the bulk suppliers.
Mm-hmm. So you mean you pre-weigh your bag, you know how much it weighs, and you just write that on the front of it so that they can subtract it?
Yes. Okay. And if you've made your own bag. So in my case, I have made my own bags out of old sheets, and I've also tested a bunch of different crayons to find one that would it's a watercolor crayon that you can write your item number on the front of the bag, and then you can wash it off. And the crayon also writes on glass. I pointed out on my blog, zerowastehome.com, I have a store, and people can find, I point to all the products that we use, there is a shopping kit that you can put together, and I also talk about that crayon. But in the case of, if I'm going to buy meat at the store, then it's the people at the counter that will deduct the tear of the jar. If I have bought olive oil, for example, then I will write the weight of the jar on the jar, and then when it goes through the cashier, they deduct it from the total amount. And on the cloth bags, so if you've made your own, I would recommend that you write the amount of the tear amount on the front of the bag. Otherwise, if you purchase your cloth bag, then there will be a tag inside the bag. It's crazy that they put it inside the bag, but but it's usually it has a tear amount.
Okay, well, that's all really good advice, and I'll look up those crayons as well on your site and link to it in our show notes so that listeners know where to find them.
Yeah, the advantage of the crayon is to basically eliminate the need for the tie, because yeah. I was going to the health food store at first, I was buying in my cloth bags, and then I thought, well, this is crazy, I have to use a tie in order to write the item number. So the advantage of having that crayon is that you can just simply write it on the bag.
What about a zero bathroom? Wow, that's another zone that's a lot of trash.
Yeah, the bathroom, I found that it's probably the most challenging for people to find really products that work for them, because everyone is different. And it takes an open mind to even try the things I'm talking about, it takes an adaptation period to get used to these things. So, for example, in lieu of toothpaste, we use baking soda. My kids, obviously, you know, they were used to regular toothpaste at first, so when we went to baking soda, it would have been like too much of a shock. So we were putting stevia powder in it for a while so that the sweetness of the stevia would cut the saltiness of the baking soda. Then they got used to simply using tooth powder, and then eventually I removed the stevia. So today we just use straight baking soda. And that's something that we can purchase in bulk, so there is no recipe, it's just simple, it's straightforward, just use the baking soda. It's worked great for us. We've been using it since 2008 and we've had no problems. And now actually we could not envision ourselves going back to toothpaste. I've actually tried once when I was at my mom's. I thought, oh, I wonder what toothpaste would taste like today. And I tried it and I hated it because it leaves a film on your teeth, like a waxy film, or a waxy film, and I just could not stand it. So I went straight back to baking soda, just to remove that waxy film. I use really where actually I make things is really for my cosmetics, because I was not happy with the options out there. And so, for example, on my cheeks, I use straight cocoa powder. It's an organic cocoa powder that I purchase in bulk. Just to fill the little jar that I use, it cost me 72 cents. And there is no way that you can match that to an organic brand of makeup at the grocery store. I make my own mascara and my own black coal for the eyes. All the recipes are in my book, and I have to say the mascara recipe is the recipe I am most proud of, because it took a lot of work to get to the right concoction. And all these recipes are made with just a couple of ingredients, a maximum maybe of three or four. So it's very simple, and all the ingredients are edible, so you can totally trust them. For example, I make a multi-purpose balm. It's a balm that I use on my lips to add shine, or even on my cheeks as a highlighter. I use it on my nails to add a little bit of shine, or on my hair to remove the frizz. And that balm alone is just made with beeswax and cooking oil, and it takes literally like 30 seconds, if that, to make it.
Yeah, I make something similar. But wow, I'm gonna have to try that mascara, because that's something I never even thought to try making myself. And what about the container? Like, how do you apply it?
So it's more like of a cake mascara, you know, the way mascara was invented. So it's actually, I have a brush, and I bought that brush, I believe, at because I've had it for 3 years now, no, even 4 years. I think it's a Jane Iredale brush. So it's basically a wooden handle with a spoolie, a mascara wand. And the mascara itself is a cake mascara, so it's solid. So you wet your brush before using it.
Okay, and it stays put, doesn't...
Yes, I must say that I used to get, when I was buying store-bought mascara, I would get conjunctivitis at least twice a year. You know, way more than that. But anyways, a minimum of two conjunctivitis a year. And now that I make my own, and I've been making my own since 2012, I haven't had a conjunctivitis since.
It's dry, not wet.
Exactly, it's dry, and it's made with natural ingredients. You know, I don't have to worry about, you know, having any nasty ingredients in there either.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm gonna try that. So then, how about your closet? I know that for a lot of people, probably, and I mean, your closet is in some ways it's about minimalism, but that, as you've demonstrated, really, it translates in so many other ways to your lifestyle.
Yeah.
So how do you approach that? I know you have a specific system, so can you tell us more about it?
Yeah, so we buy our clothes twice a year, so mid-April and mid-October, because that's the beginning of two big seasons. And when I go shopping, I only go to a thrift store. I go to two huge thrift stores, so I can do all my shopping for the whole family in just one day. So I pick items that are very versatile, and that can be mixed, matched, and dressed up or down, and can also take me through the seasons. I've been able to narrow my wardrobe down to very few items. As a matter of fact, my whole wardrobe fits in a carry-on, which is great, because when I need to travel, I don't have to think about what to pack, because I can pack it all. I don't have to worry about losing my luggage because we never check it in. We always have it all we take it with us on the plane. And also, since all of our wardrobes fit in carry-ons, that means that when we want to go away for a weekend, or when we want to go away for a month or a week, all we have to do is take our carry-ons down. We throw it in our wardrobes in it. We zip it. We're out the door. Then we have a cleaning service that comes, cleans the house, and then we have people that come and rent our house, and that basically pays for our vacation, our weekend, and it's really been amazing. I gotta say, we've been able to live some really amazing things thanks to that. In the case of my wardrobe, for example, I only have, again, a very few pieces. I just have five pairs of shoes, one pair of shorts, two pairs of pants, two dresses, two skirts, seven tops, two sweaters, three jackets, one work bag, one carry-on, one purse. Anyways, it's, you know, again, it's about finding pieces that work for you, learning, you know, really what works best for you. In a regular wardrobe, people only use 20% of their clothes. The other 80% are there for the what if. What if I lose weight? What if I gain weight, in my case? What if I have a wedding to go to? What if I have a business meeting or a interview, a job interview? Anyways, we all have, I would say people in general have reasons why they keep those 80%. What we've done is figure out what our 80% were, and we've let go of them. And it's easy to know what your 20% are, because they're the clothes that you keep wearing, they're the clothes that you keep washing, they're the clothes on top of the pile, they're the clothes in the middle of your of the rack. So it's you know exactly what those are.
But then obviously, so then when you go shopping twice a year, you're obviously donating then some pieces to keep that minimalist number.
Yeah, I stick to that number. I've been sticking to that same number since 2010, I believe. So when I go to the, and same for my kids and my husband. I mean, my kids have like seven short sleeve shirts, two long sleeve shirts, the three pairs of jeans, one pair of shorts, one pair of sneakers, one pair of flip flops. And so when I go shopping, I basically buy things that I personally grow tired, especially after 6 months. I grow tired of colors or patterns, and those are the items that I want to be changing. So then I buy more than what I need often, and especially for the kids because they're not with me. So knowing that they need seven T-shirts, for example, I'll buy 10. And then whatever they choose to either keep or donate, I mean, we basically do that ratio. They keep seven, and then we donate the rest. We actually donated to our pastor and their family, and then, I mean, for the kids' clothes. And then my clothes, I donate to his wife. Otherwise, I donate a bunch to the local thrift store, and same for my husband.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So I guess seven is not an arbitrary number. That's just what you found to be a good amount.
Yeah, it's up to everyone to figure out what their amount is. I mean, people tell me, well, I live in the, you know, deep north of Quebec. It's too cold. Yeah. I could not, you know, do with just one jacket or whatever. And I say, well, you know, I'm only here. I'm not here to tell people how to live their lives. I'm only here to tell how we live ours. And if that can inspire them, great. But it's up to everyone to adapt the zero waste lifestyle to their regional restrictions and their personal needs.
The last question, because I know that you are short on time, but we're coming up on a time of year that I think is extremely waste-producing compared to others, I mean the holidays. So what are some strategies that people could implement and think about to reduce waste during this time, especially when it comes to holiday decorating and gift-giving?
So just to start with decorating, what we've done in our house is today we no longer use a normal, like a Christmas tree. One day I just got tired of going to get the same Christmas tree that was live and we had to cut down or whatever. It just broke my heart, and I thought, you know, this is crazy. I'm buying a tree, but I already have one at home. I had a tall potted plant, and I thought, well, we can use that instead. And it actually gave it a modern feel, and we really enjoyed decorating that our topiary, basically. And then as far as just decorating around the house, we use things from nature. There is no need to buy things. You can even make a garland with popcorn and or dried orange slices. This is even a fun activity to do as a family. It's a bonding activity. Today, because again, we live this minimalist lifestyle, which allows us to travel more and live a life based on experiences. Around the Christmas holidays, we always rent our house out, so then we go elsewhere. So this year, we'll be going to Guadeloupe, because also I will be speaking there ahead of the holidays. But so then wherever we find ourselves spending the holidays, we'll decorate with what's on hand. So last year we were in Florida. We found a little branch of in the hotel, there was a little branch of pine, and we used that. We put it in a cup in our hotel room, and we decorated things. We decorated it with a little piece of scrap paper that we found, and we really had fun doing this. And then as far as gifts, we today give the gift of experiences instead of things. We like to give the gift that we would like to receive. So for example, because we travel every year, it's an opportunity for the grandparents to give us a gift of an experience wherever we are. So one year we were in Costa Rica, they gave us they gave the kids a parasailing experience. Another time it was indoor skydiving or a jungle tour when we were in Costa Rica. Last year we stayed in the Undersea Lodge in Florida. So wherever we are, there is a new activity to discover anyways. And then we also give the gift of experience. So, and especially in the case of the kid's grandmother, for example, she does not need more stuff. She doesn't want more stuff. So it's actually what really she wants is more time from us. So the gift that we give her is more time with us. So the kids have given her a lunch out just on their own, so it's a one-on-one with her. She just loves it. And the kids, too, they have their grandma all to themselves. And for the younger kids, actually, even when we started out with this lifestyle, the first zero-waste experiential gift that we give was to my son was 7, and he was and his friend was also 7, and it was his birthday, so my son decided we decided to just basically pay for them to let them go to a coffee shop just on their own and order all on their own with no parents. And that was like such an awesome experience for them. They still remember it. They couldn't stop talking about it. The mom thought it was a great idea, so then she started giving the gift of experiences also. If you're thinking about not doing experiences and you really want to give something more tangible, then you can give a consumable, whether it's something that you purchase in bulk or something that you make, like a jam, or if you make soap, whatever hobby you're into. You can also buy secondhand, and you can basically find anything secondhand on eBay if it's super specific. Even we sometimes fall back on eBay for things that are very specific. Just when you buy something though on eBay, make sure that you click the option to the left that says pre-owned, and then request that it only be sent to you in paper or cardboard. And then the way you wrap all these presents is simply with a cloth bag. If you have just a short collection of cloth bags, you can use them year after year. And when you give a gift in that cloth bag, you're also sending a message for them to do the same.
I mean, I can imagine. I mean, think about when your kids get older and all those experiences of traveling and the places that they've been. I mean, most kids have been to maybe 2 places. They have experienced so much more, and they will remember that forever as opposed to that one toy that will be
forgotten. And that is exactly what differentiates them from other kids. People ask me, well, how do they feel with their, I mean, are they embarrassed with their friends? I'm like, are you kidding me? They're proud. And their friends tell their parents, I want to live like the Johnsons. The Johnsons do so many experiences. They Max, you know, he's just 15 and he's gone skydiving for his birthday. And, you know, they in April we decided to ride our bikes from San Francisco to Los Angeles. All their friends thought that was so cool. They told their parents about it, and they demanded that their parents do the same thing with them. So I think it's neat that my kids are basically standing out for what they do instead of what they have.
Mm-hmm. I think so too. Well, Thea, thank you. I really, really appreciate it. This has been a great, great interview. I can't wait for our listeners to really absorb all of this information. So thanks. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Celine.
So that concludes my talk with Bea. I truly hope you enjoyed it and that it's got you thinking about changing your habits and moving towards going waste-free. I've made some major progress myself over the years, but food packaging waste is the final frontier that I'm struggling to deal with, as you heard in the episode. However, after talking with Bea, my resolve is stronger than ever to try and effect change at the policy level of our stores. Who knows? It might just work out. Find links in the show notes for the episode over at puregreenmag.com/podcast/Bea. And feel free to leave your thoughts and comments over on our Facebook page at facebook.com/puregreenmag. I'd love to know how Bea has inspired you. Oh, and one more thing. If you're interested in a visual wake-up call on how much garbage we actually produce, check out this documentary called Garbage, The Revolution Starts at Home, created by our past guest, Andrew Nisker, from episode 7. It does a great job of showing not just how much we produce, but also connecting the dots on the effects our garbage and consumption has on the planet. Thank you for listening. I'm Celine McKay, and you're listening to the Pure Green Podcast.